Hello and welcome to the 298th episode of the...
You're on mute. Can you start over? I can't hear anything when you're on mute.
Yeah, for some reason, the host muted me.
What an asshole.
You know what? I was trying to be incognito, and I was like, all right, I'm going to mute you all so I don't hear your podcast. And I didn't realize that's what would happen. That sounded like such a great intro, and I was going to be like, oh, I can't wait to listen to that later. Doug is so confident.
We got to keep this all in. This better not be edited out.
I've just messed everything up for you guys.
Oh, I'm not editing this out. Don't worry. It's all staying.
You guys enjoy yourselves. Take two from Mr. Doug.
Doug, let's start this again. Even though people are going to hear the original beginning because I'm not getting rid of it.
Sounds good. Well, welcome to the 298th episode of the Extra Features Podcast. We're down a few hosts today, but I am Doug, and with me is the big boss himself. Now you're muted.
This guy is driving me nuts. Whoever's there's Daniel is here, people. He's just screwing around. But doesn't matter. I am here. I have not missed an episode of 298. I'm the only cast member that's never missed an episode.
And I think you're the only cast member who's seen all the movies on today's episode. So
I'm crazy. The funny thing is, I have missed one movie.
Okay,
but it didn't matter because we didn't do it. We did it in Nicole Kidman. We used to do retrospect on an actor years ago.
Okay,
and there was a Tom Cruise movie called Far and Away. I think Nicole Kidman's in it.
Yes.
We didn't do it. For some reason, somebody forgot to put it on the list, so I never saw it. And we're doing this retrospect. I'm like, that wasn't on the list. Did I miss a movie? And that's the only one I've never seen in all the years because they didn't tell me it was on the list.
Nice. Well, I think there's going to be at least one movie this episode where you get to talk to yourself.
Oh, I know, and it's something that's near and dear to my heart, at least the character is, because it kind of made me fall in love with this franchise.
Okay, so do you want to just jump into it then?
Yeah, well, we're going to do a different show here. Unless, do you want to discuss the cast list for Lightyear, or no, you don't even have it up?
I got it right in front of me here. We got Tim Allen. I'm just kidding. It's Chris Evans as Lightyear.
Oh, shit, really? I thought it was Tim Allen the whole time.
You got Kiki Palmer, you got Peter Sohn, you got Taika Waititi, Dale Solis, and James Brolin is in it as well.
Really?
Yes, he plays Zurg, according to IMDb.
Oh, right, that makes sense, him playing Zurg. That's the only thing I think of, because he's got to play Zurg. That's the only big character in this. I was solely looking forward to this, like being a diehard Toy Story fan, having a Toy Story 1 poster framed in his movie room.
Nice.
And having a Toy Story 2 poster to go right beside it. I just haven't done it. And an Incredibles poster right beside that. My money. Here you go. You got my money. I have a Buzz Lightyear toy. I have a Martian toy. Like, I'm Andy from this movie. Like, I friggin' love these characters. What the hell was this? This made Andy buy Buzz? Not a chance in hell. I don't know what this movie is. It's not geared to kids because they're going to fall asleep. It's not funny enough for kids. There are no jokes in this movie that your kids are going to laugh at.
How about action? Is it like geared more towards the Marvel fan base that Chris Evans would bring in?
That's what I would think. But no, it's the weirdest thing. It was like watching a half an hour TV show just over and over again. Because I felt every half an hour, they're like, okay, we got to change the scenario. So Buzz goes into the future and things jump 4 minutes. He gets 4 minutes older, and I think it's 4 years for them on wherever he left.
Okay.
And he keeps doing this. So what they're doing is resetting the movie every half an hour roughly.
Wow, okay.
And then characters change. So you get to know these characters right at the beginning of the movie. Well, half an hour later, those characters are done. We don't need them anymore. You have new characters. He comes back, and he's like, what do you mean? I've only been gone 4 minutes. He's like, no, you've been gone 4 years. We've moved on from you. He's like, what? Why'd you move on? Then he tests the thing out again. He jumps another 4 years and another, you know what I mean? He keeps jumping. So eventually these people have dropped dead by the end of the movie. And we have new characters we get to hang out with. I'm like, whoa, whoa. I didn't even know if I liked those other characters yet. I didn't even really feel I got to know them. But now I have to get, so then I have to like Buzz. And I'm like, I don't like Buzz. He's a dick.
How about the cat? What about his robot cat?
That's two robot cats. One dies. I'm convinced there's two cats. There's no way the cat could live that long.
Well, if it's a robot.
Who knows? Okay. The problem is it just gets confusing. I'm like, how does a kid understand this? I'm having problems trying to figure out who the hell is who. And every time they're like, oh, at one point we get near the end of the movie. So we know we're getting near the end. There's no more time jumping because Buzz has had enough. And the character goes, oh, I'm the daughter of the character from the beginning of the movie. I'm like, really? So now we're introducing me new characters again. So, okay, I got it. These idiots are the ones from the end. So I have the woman. I have another woman and some comedy relief. So this is where the comedy is at the end of the movie when Zurg finally shows up to attack. And I'm like, I don't care. Can we wrap this up? This is way too long now. I'm bored. I find this uninteresting. The dialogue is like, I don't care. I really just don't care. I'm a Toy Story fanatic and I'm bored. I'm like, why would Andy buy this figure? Why would Andy not leave this movie and go, Mom, this movie sucks?
So now, I think
if you're under 10, this movie might be great because you won't kind of, you know what I mean? It'll feel like a TV episode.
So do you think a Woody movie will be coming down the line somewhere?
See, I disagree. Woody is a TV character. He had his own show. They show you that. Mm-hmm. So, and everybody keeps saying there should be a Woody movie. I'm like, no, Woody is a TV character. And they show you that in the movies. You see scenes of Woody jumping through with Bullseye. Mm-hmm. And it looks terrible, but it works for that universe. I don't want to see that. That doesn't even look interesting to me. Give me the Mr. Potato Head movie. Or maybe the dinosaur T-Rex. I guess we'll get to that in a future episode. But that kind of stuff. The thing is, I don't know who wrote this movie. It's not funny enough to be a Pixar movie. It's not deep enough to be a Pixar movie. It kind of annoys me being a Pixar fan and a fan of this franchise and basically opening my mouth and having somebody ram it down my throat. Probably like watching Jaws 2 or Jaws 3, Jaws 4. If you love Jaws 1, you're going to see Jaws 2 and 3 and 4 because it's a giant shark and you like them. So, yeah, I'm going to go see the next Liger movie. They make it absolutely. But again, I'm going to force feed myself to watch it.
So do you think it was a mistake for Disney not to release this on Disney Plus?
Yes.
And go straight to the theaters, unlike, say, Turning Red?
Which I agree. Turning Red should have gone to theaters.
Okay.
Much better film. I think this is going to be, I mean, it's not as bad as A Good Dinosaur, mm-hmm, which was just awful.
But it's not top tier Pixar.
It's not even top 15.
Okay.
I mean, I love Bugs Life. There's a movie that gets no respect. I just absolutely enjoy Bugs Life, but this is just kind of minor. Like Good Dinosaur, this, it's all around that level for me. Just bleh. Okay. Yeah, Chris Evans just did this for the cash. You cannot convince me. He did it for his kids. But isn't his kid like little?
I don't even know if he has a kid or not.
Yeah, he had a kid whoever he's dating now or married. Okay. No, he's Catholic, so he's married because he's hardcore religious.
I thought that was Chris Pratt. I thought that was the other one. Chris.
Oh, wait. This is Captain America.
Yes.
Oh, sorry. No, he's not married. You're right. Yeah. Chris Pratt. No, Captain America's not married that I know of. I just think this was a waste of his talent. I think they just used him for the name. He took his $10 million he probably made.
It's probably same thing with like all the cat. Taika Waititi, he probably just wanted.
Oh, he was I felt bad for him because, I mean, I think now he's just doing projects for the money.
Mm-hmm.
I liked him when he just show up occasionally and he was funny. But after Free Guy, I'm like, buddy, are you watching what you're doing?
Yeah.
Because you're throwing away something I love. I love you, but I'm not impressed lately.
I get that.
Like, oh, Disney money. I'll take that.
I think they're just doing it to promote their Marvel movies. Taika now has Thor coming out in a couple weeks.
I'm looking forward to that. Now, speaking of Marvel, maybe you could help me. If Kevin was here, he would totally be into this. I'm reading a rumor there's a Thunderbolt movie.
Yes, I have heard that.
Now, that I'm excited about. Now, I love the Thunderbolts. I've read a good 40 issues of that. And that, like, they can't screw that up, can they?
It depends. I mean, from what I've heard, they're going with the bad guy characters that they introduced in the Disney Plus shows, like U.S. Agent, Florence Pugh's Black Widow, and who's the other one? I think the Daniel Brühl Baron Zemo.
Okay, he's the leader.
Yeah, he was the leader in the comics. So those are the three I've heard rumored for the movie.
Well, I'm looking forward to that. I did not look forward to Lightyear. I mean, I'm sure you would see it if I told you it was Doug. This is phenomenal. I really suggest you see it. And I'll you, stay away. Run.
Run. I'll see it when it comes on Disney Plus. Once it comes on Disney Plus, I'll watch it then.
I can't wait to hear you. So we're going to move on to Barry Lyndon.
Yes, Barry Lyndon. Bring up the cast list here.
Ryan O'Neill, directed by Stanley Kubrick, and I don't remember anybody else.
Yeah, I don't remember anybody else either, but...
And I just watched it for the first time.
Really? For the first time?
Yes. Remember, people got to understand, since just me and Doug, we can get a little more deeper into the background of Extra Features. Me and Doug talk all the time. Like, some weeks we don't talk just because there's nothing going on, and then we'll have, like, a four-day conversation with directors.
Yes.
Because Doug will say something on Facebook, and I'll be like, what? And I send Doug a message, and he sends me one back. And me and Doug have been discussing directors and how we should, being cinephiles, really dig into filmographies. So on the show lately, when it's my turn to pick, I've been trying very hard to eliminate films I haven't seen.
Yes.
And I'm like, we have another one coming up on a future episode, which I had not seen. And me and Doug both love old movies, pre-1970s movies. So I try to find movies for me and Doug really to talk about. I don't really worry about the rest of the guys in the show because I'm not sure if Kevin has time to watch with the travel schedule. And Daniel's too busy eating hot dogs and Canadian Tire out in the parking lot to really watch movies. So
but now I got to ask you, because a couple years ago on Facebook, I actually asked my friends, Barry Lyndon, is it a pretentious 3-hour boring film or a cinematic masterpiece? I think the majority of the answers I got back were just yes. It's both. It's a masterpiece. It's a masterpiece, but it is also very long. But it's also a movie when I watched it, I felt like I could live in it. It felt very real to me. And my one big takeaway from when I watched that movie was that Kubrick he wanted to use natural lighting. So he had a special lens invented for the camera so he could film indoors using just candle lights. And I don't know, to me, it just made everything feel real. It made everything feel lived in. It didn't feel like sets. It felt like he traveled back in time and was actually filming that time period. I don't know how you felt when you watched it.
No, I absolutely agree with you. First off, I want to state I was bored out of my skull.
Yeah.
Did not find this interesting. And Ryan O'Neill is just an awful actor. I think I've come to terms with he has nothing to offer me in any film. I've seen Love Story. He was dull. Okay. I saw this. Dull. I'm like, hey, I'm just not a Ryan O'Neill fan.
How about What's Up, Doc? Have you seen What's Up, Doc?
No, I have not. I don't think.
Okay.
But
him and Barbara Streisand.
I haven't seen it.
Peter Bogdanovich directed. It's one of the few Bogdanovich films I love. So I would recommend
that. I love Bogdanovich. So going back to this. Remember the scenes when he's signing checks continuously?
Mm-hmm.
Why the hell do I have three scenes of this? Don't care. Looks great. Get me wrong. I can feel I'm the guy sitting there going, sign here. So I get that. But I don't need three scenes of an itinerary going, he's running out of money. He really got to go. He can't. I'm like, I don't care. I really don't care. Kubrick, I'm going to kick you in the balls any minute if you were still alive, because this is being pretentious. You're like, look at me. I'm Kubrick. I can do whatever the fuck I want. I got it. You are. You're literally, my mouth is wide open. I'm like, this thing is beautiful. The lighting is beautiful. Costuming, phenomenal. But you're like, I'm going to make the boringest movie ever, and they're going to watch it because it's me. And that's really what I felt he was telling me in this movie. The women are the most boring things I've ever seen. His wife has got no charisma, does nothing throughout the film. And I find it doesn't pick up till the second, last hour is pretty solid.
Yeah, for me, the things that stick out in my mind is the duel.
Yes, that's in the last hour.
The duel, it's been a couple of years since I've watched this movie, but the duel... that sticks out in my mind. That's where the movie kind of had life for a little bit. But I'm looking at Kubrick's filmography. This is the movie he did in between Clockwork Orange and The Shining. So in between those two movies, he does this period piece that's really sedate and quiet.
I don't know, but do we see? I think we could even argue we see elements of this in The Shining for sure. The very long shots. He does that when he's on horseback and the guys are all robbing him at the beginning. That's a long shot. And you also see when they're marching. He is far away on that march. He's not – nowadays it would be really up close on Ryan O'Neill. Not Kubrick. Yes. Kubrick's like 14 fields away shooting. And I'm like, beautiful.
Good. Yeah, he's done that his entire career. Scenes in Spartacus with –
yeah, and we see it again here.
The mountain. Yeah.
All that stuff is here. And The Shining down the hallway, he just seems to have that ability to encapsulate the viewer that way, bring you into a scene. Because you're saying you can feel live there. I could feel I was walking with those soldiers watching this film.
Yeah. Yeah.
I could feel, and that duel scene is so well shot. I could say I was at that duel. I really felt I was at that duel. When he's spanking his kid, I was upset the kid was getting spanked, even though he deserved it. I get that. Kubrick brought this out of me. I don't like this movie in any way. But I feel for these characters watching it because it's so well shot.
Yes.
And so well lifted and feels so real. And you're right. It never feels like a set, ever.
Yeah, but that doesn't necessarily make it entertaining or
it's not entertaining to anybody. Yeah. I think this is one of those films you got to be a cinephile or love period pieces.
Yes, yes.
I mean, I'm not. If somebody said Kubrick, I would not go watch Barry Lyndon. You really got to see this. No,
yeah.
I'd recommend that one with the guy stealing the money on the plane. I can't remember. It's a great film. You know the one I'm thinking of. I could look it up, but that's the one.
Yeah, the only one I can think of is The Killing. But that was They were robbing a racetrack.
That's the one. Sorry, that. But they escape on the plane. They have the whole airport scene that's just phenomenal.
Yes, yes,
that is like amazing Kubrick that nobody talks about.
Yes, that is a fantastic film.
Well, blame these dollars, these things I pick up at garage sales, because that's where I picked this one up. And
fair.
I really felt the need to watch it. I'm like, you know what? I buy these DVDs, and they sit on my shelf. So I said, you know what? That's it. I'm watching these films. I took a big stack of 10, and I'm working my way through them. It's like one that we're not going to do. I'll just bring up. I watched Whirlpool with Gene Tierney the other day because I'd never seen it.
Okay.
And I'm like, I've had this for 2 years. Why have I not watched it? I'm putting this on tonight. I'm watching today. And it was okay. I mean, I don't know why it was never talked about. There's really nothing to talk about. It looks, Otto Preminger directed it, so that's really why I wanted to see it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I kind of feel that way about a movie we'll be discussing in a future episode.
Oh, can't wait for that.
Yes.
Now, speaking of films that I don't think should have been – that look great but taste less filling, let's move on to our next film.
So are you talking about Warren Beatty's Dick Tracy?
Pretty much. It's funny. I mean, this is my list, so I'll just keep leading.
Go for it.
I have not – I remember going on a date with my then-girlfriend to see this and really liking it. Not saying it was great, but liking it. Mm-hmm. Rewatching this, I'm like, what did I like about this? This is a complete mess of a film.
I will be honest. This is one I actually, for some reason, I just had a hankering to watch it. So earlier this year, I bought the Blu-ray and put it on one night. My biggest takeaway from when I saw it first in the theater was my dad, about 2 days after watching the movie, goes, "Hey, wait a minute. That was Al Pacino as the bad guy?" He didn't recognize Pacino at all in the makeup. He didn't recognize Dustin Hoffman. I mean, that's one thing. The makeup in this movie is pretty damn good.
Oh, amazing. Amazing makeup.
But yeah, when I watched it again this year, I'm like, wow, this is – I don't know. I never found Warren Beatty to be an intimidating good guy. Like, he's supposed to be like the scourge of the underworld, but I don't know. He never felt that way to me. And the one thing I just clearly remembered from the first time I watched it was Mumbles, them slowing down his interrogation, him just saying, "Big boy did it." I don't know why that stuck in my head, but it did. What did you think of Madonna in this movie?
Not bad. Probably her best role ever, because she's playing a singer. So there's really not much she can do. I felt bad for her scenes with Al Pacino. And Al Pacino's like, "Gotta do it this way." I'm like, what are you doing? What the hell are you doing? You're supposed to be this badass mobster. And I'm laughing at you because you're a loser.
Well, this was like probably right around the start of like Al Pacino being big Al Pacino. And he was playing a comic character. So I could see why he would go that way.
But I think that's the whole problem with this film. Did they actually read the comic strip before they wrote it? Like, Dick Tracy is supposed to be good-looking. I'm not saying Warren Beatty's ugly, but hardcore.
Yeah.
Like, he's supposed to be beating the crap out of these guys, and does he even throw a punch in this movie?
I remember him throwing one when he first meets the kid in that – when he gets to that shack where the kid's hanging out, and he beats up the guy who was, like, using the kid to rob people.
That kid is terrible. Should have been cut.
Yeah.
Like, talk about something unneeded. It was that whole kid thing. I'm like, okay, I got the kid, but they keep going back to him eating and back to him eating. I'm like, why is this kid in this movie? Just to identify? So, like, I don't care. Yes, Warren Beatty wants a kid. I got that. But again, why is that in this movie? That's not Dick Tracy.
No. And the one thing that kind of bothered me was the love triangle with Madonna's character and Tess Trueheart and Dick Tracy. If Tracy's supposed to be this really good guy, I don't think he would be tempted by the Madonna character here.
I 100% agree with you. He'd be like, "Sorry, I'm Dick Tracy." No.
Yeah, I have Tess and I'm happy.
And Tess was perfectly cast.
Yes, yes, she was very.
I absolutely thought she was the best thing in this. And Paul Sorvino wasn't bad. I thought he did a pretty good job.
Yeah, but he was only in it for a little bit.
But that's what I want Paul Sorvino to be in. Nobody wants a lot of Paul Sorvino. Nobody's like, "Oh, we need more Paul Sorvino." No, no, you don't. We want less Paul Sorvino. But he was fine. I want him to be what he is, a character actor.
Yes.
I think if we take Warren Beatty out, Al Pacino, and you got to leave Dustin Hoffman as Mumbles, fabulous.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I was thinking to myself, I think Val Kilmer would have been a better Dick Tracy.
Now you're getting into the Saint territory.
Right, like, which I do love The Saint, though. I think it's a great film. Just
I haven't watched that one yet. I haven't seen that
yet. Never seen it? Okay, well, I'll leave it up to you when you see it. But I love The Saint. But who other actors at that time could have played Dick Tracy? I mean, I have to look at who was around.
Around that time?
Yeah. Swayze might have been even okay, but I think that's too early. Swayze might have been okay.
Would Redford have been too old at the time?
No, I think he might have just been. If we did a later Dick Tracy, maybe the return of them, maybe Redford would have worked. I mean, we need somebody that can actually act. And Warren Beatty does not impress me as an actor. I've watched Shampoo. I've watched all these. I'm like, I don't get it. How are you a star?
The one time I loved Warren Beatty was Bonnie and Clyde. Bonnie and Clyde, I think he was fantastic in.
But my argument with Bonnie and Clyde is the script's amazing. Its directing's amazing.
Yes.
That made Warren Beatty a star, and he just milked that thing the whole rest of his career. I mean, McCabe and Miller, maybe. I'll give you. He wasn't bad in that.
No, but that was also, Altman.
Exactly.
I give credit to Altman for that.
I agree with you. But Beatty did nothing on his own that was anything good, I thought.
I've never seen Red, so I can't comment on that.
Okay. I have I saw Reds in grade 7 at my high school. At my grade 7, they had a movie night. I have not seen Reds since. I don't remember anything about Reds. So it may have been good. I just don't remember.
That seems like a very weird movie to show a bunch of 7th graders. Isn't it like highly political?
I think it was because it was at the high school, because we were attached to a high school. So maybe they were showing Reds at the high school.
Okay.
But I honestly, I only went there for 1 year, so I really don't have a lot of memories of that, but I do remember seeing Reds.
Okay.
I think I just went for the popcorn. Probably they said free popcorn, so I probably would just show up for the free popcorn, knowing me. But that's just me. Yeah, I think the problem with Dick Tracy, it's terribly written. The dialogue leads nowhere. The kid needs to go. We need a little bit more action in this film and less dancing.
Yes. And it was also very stylized. I know Beatty wanted to mimic the comic strips with just like the four colors, but I think he also limited himself that way. I think if it was, I don't know, to compare it to like Ang Lee's Hulk, Ang Lee tried to mimic a comic book with like panels and stuff. I think maybe Beatty could have gone in that direction a little more instead of limiting himself, but I guess Dick Tracy was a newspaper strip, not really a comic book, so.
But my argument is, no, they took the newspaper strips and put them in comics. I can't remember who released them. I should have off the top of my head. But I think they were just the strips. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it had an actual thing. But that doesn't matter. Again, Chester Gould would have gone, no, this is not happening. I'm sure if he read it, went, nope, not happening. You could do better. That's what I mean. But this is also the birth of comic book movies. Like they were that stupid Batman Joel Schumacher movie, which is a total nonsense. And even the one with Mr. Freeze, total nonsense. Garbage. And I think Dick Tracy just came out that same pile. So when X-Men came out years later, we're like, well, that didn't suck. That was a positive.
Yeah.
Not that I'm saying X-Men was good. I'm just saying, after sitting through Dick Tracy and the two Batman movies, I'm like, well, didn't suck like Dick Tracy.
See, I credit Blade with starting the Marvel trend.
Blade was phenomenal, though. But there's a movie that they actually had. David Goyer's a great writer at times. And that's actually a thing. And you got Wesley Snipes, who does no wrong in any movie he's ever in. Like, I've watched Waiting to Exhale because Wesley Snipes was in. I'm like, he is so good.
Yes.
Absolutely. The movie's okay, but Wesley Snipes is amazing in this movie.
Yes. He was the best part of Coming to America.
He is. Because you're sitting there going, Arsenio Hall is not an actor. And it's just, he's $10 million. I'm in, Eddie. And he shows up, right? And that's why he's there. He's not there because he wants to act. He wants his $10 million because all of individuals probably aren't. I've never seen that show again. Is it even on the air somewhere?
No, like it's on a
talk show channel? So he's not making any money. I mean, he probably made good money for Arsenio Hall, mind you.
Yes.
But Wesley Snipes, I mean, I felt really bad when he went to jail because, I mean, I used to watch his direct-to-video stuff. And I'm like, He's so good. Why is this guy not still acting? If Tom Cruise is still acting, Wesley Snipes should be still acting on that level. He's so good. I mean, the third Blue Blade movie blew chunks, but not because of Wesley Snipes. It's just an awful movie.
Yeah, that was just bad.
So I hope Wesley Snipes shows up in more stuff.
He wasn't even in any of the movies we watched tonight.
But he's so good, we just have to discuss him. So, moving on.
Yes.
Adam Sandler's movie came out. A new Adam Sandler. He's playing a serious guy for a change.
Yeah. Yeah, so we're going to discuss Hustle, directed by Jeremiah Zager, starring Adam Sandler, Queen Latifah. I can't pronounce Bo's name. He's a basketball player. That's... And Ben Foster.
He plays the Utah Jazz, I think.
Mm-hmm. I don't follow the NBA.
So. I don't either. I don't watch basketball, so I couldn't tell you his real name. So do you want to start Hustle?
Sure, I could start Hustle. This is the Adam Sandler I like. I don't like Adam Sandler comedies, per se. I like it when he's more serious. I loved Uncut Gems, and this is more in that vein. However, the movie itself was really paint-by-the-numbers sports film. You kind of knew what was going to happen if you've ever seen any sports film at all. There were some things I liked that were kind of different. I've heard it mentioned that, you know, Adam Sandler doesn't actually play a buffoon in this. His wife actually likes him and isn't, you know, riding him to grow up or anything. He plays an adult character. I just wish that there was a little more complication to the movie. I thought Ben Foster played a very generic, I don't want to say bad guy because he's not, you know, a villain per se, but he is an asshole. I'll say he's a very generic asshole in this movie that you do like seeing get his comeuppance at the end. But I don't know. It was just a very generic movie for me. I can't go higher than like 2.5, 3 stars.
I gave it a 6 because I like Adam Sandler. I've never dogged his acting because Uncut Gems and Punch Drunk Love are brilliant films. And I look at him that way. Now, yeah, this is a paint-by-numbers family film. I knew when I was going in. I'm watching, like, okay, I know where this is going. But I don't care. Because I'm loving Sandler being Sandler. This is good. I love the joke when he calls Queen Latifah and goes, yeah, I'm eating the cuisine. And he's eating Burger King. And I thought that was funny. And Queen Latifah, that's probably her best acting role in years. Like, she does nothing to do, but she does enough to make me feel good about her. Yes. Now, what I did love, I love his daughter. I thought his daughter added some nice depth to this film. I thought they gave everybody something to do, except for Bo Cruz. Because, I mean, we know what Bo Cruz is there to do. Mm-hmm. He's there to get to the end. He's got to win because Adam needs him to win so Adam can have some money for his family. I got that. But I like things like the jokes. The Pringles joke was good. I thought that was okay. I do think that the Ben Foster character is a dick, but we got to have some villain in this film to give us some reason to root for Bo Cruz.
I guess so.
I mean, we have Anthony Anderson, who's, I didn't know, I had to ask somebody to watch his basketball, who the hell he was. And then he told me he actually plays basketball. He's the number one pick. Mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, I had no idea who these people are. Like, I knew they're basketball players. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if they're good basketball players. I mean, I have no idea. They could all be bench warmers for all I know.
Yeah, I don't know. I think my sports stories are more about underdog teams. Those are the ones that I like better. I like Hoosiers, keeping it in basketball. I also love like the Bad News Bears. I like teams, not necessarily scouting movies with, I don't know, it just kind of reminds me of something like Angels in the Outfield or something like that.
Which I have never seen.
You're not missing much.
Well, I mean, well, what about Trouble with the Curve? There's a scouting movie. I know it's baseball, but that's a scouting
movie.
Yeah,
but I'm not a big fan of that one either.
Okay. Well, I mean, I gave that the same score as this. It's not going to upset you, but it's watchable.
Yeah. I mean, it is watchable. And I also think if you're an Adam Sandler fan, this is something different. It's not Hubie Halloween. It's that he's actually doing something here.
I'm going to get in trouble. Hubie Halloween, I did find funny at times, a couple of jokes. It's a terrible film. It's got a couple decent jokes in it. I'm like, this is awful. So speaking of, I think parts of Hustle, I like when he made him run up the hill continuously. I thought it was really good.
Okay.
I mean, we knew he was going to do it. Don't get me wrong. At no time did I not think he was making that hill.
Yes.
And just go ahead.
I was going to say, just like at no time did you think he's not going to be drafted by the NBA.
At one point, I might have had a shot. Remember when he goes to the first trial camp and they send everybody home? Mm-hmm. And then I go, as soon as they go, is that your daughter? I'm like, oh, crap, here we go. I know where this scene's going, and I don't care. And then at the last second, he's driving back. I'm like, is this movie going to end on a downer? I'll be impressed. That's what I was hoping. Give me something I wasn't expecting. I'm like, oh, I wouldn't have seen that. But no, then he gets the phone call. Oh, there's another. I'm like, okay, this movie's done. I know where it's going now. But I'm like, oh, are we going to end on a downer? Because I would not have seen that coming. And I would have totally given the film credit for doing that.
No, that would have been interesting. But instead, we get the very paint-by-numbers. Oh, look, he did make it. And now he's a coach. And now they're facing off against each other. But, you know, they're buddies.
Well, I thought it was a little bit bad. Remember they kept bringing up he has an assault charge? I'm like, really? That's his big thing? I said, really? Don't we have guys that murdered people playing in the NFL? And maybe playing in the NBA? I mean, don't get me wrong. I don't know enough about NBA players. So somebody's emailed me and said, don't we? That's possible. I'm just saying, an assault charge, we don't know. I'm like, really? That's a little weak, yeah. I thought. I mean, that's his big kryptonite. I mean, from what I've understood, if a guy can play basketball, they're drafting him. They don't care.
Yeah.
Unless you physically are hurting underage children, I think you'll be working.
Yeah, just don't tweet anything inappropriate.
Yeah, like don't drink it. Oh, wait, you can drink and drive. That's okay, though. But no, not in, I mean, I don't know. And they don't even show you the assault. So they just sort of just push that in. Mm-hmm. And I like how it gets redeemed at the end, that they sort of move Ben Foster inside and go, hey, Adam, I'm in charge now. Would you like a job? Oh, okay, thank you. I'm like, okay, I see. We're going to wrap this up because it's an Adam Sandler movie and everybody's going to be happy.
See, that's why you got to go with Uncut Gems. That's the one that did not have a happy ending.
I love that. As we know how much I love Uncut Gems.
Yes.
Okay. We're finally down to our last film tonight, Doug.
Yes. I actually forgot what it is.
Had you ever seen this film before? Had you even heard of it?
Explorers. Yes, I have, actually. I remember watching it when I was young, and I just rewatched it again last year. Explorers, directed by Joe Dante, starring River Phoenix, Ethan Hawke. I'm sure I'm missing some others, but those are just ones off the top of my head. So was this your first time seeing
it? It was a first time viewing. Now, I'm going to tell you how I even discovered this film. We're working on a future project. I want to reveal it now for episode 300. So I was sitting with a bunch of guys, and we're just we're at the Mandarin. I do remember we were going to celebrate one of my daughter's dance friend's dinners. I said, guys, I got a problem. They're like, I said, I can't think of a movie from a certain year for this list we're working on, this thing we're discussing. And they're like, what? Let's see what you haven't seen. And they started naming films. And this one came up. I'm like, what? I've never heard of this. They're like, oh. And then we got this big discussion about this film. Then we had looked up who's in it. We just said, you know what? Then I'm going to have to watch it now. So that's how I even know this film existed, from my buddy picking up a phone and reading 80s movies you've never seen.
Okay.
So that's it. So, and I got to say, I didn't know it was directed by Joe Dante. There's a man that gets no respect for the amount of good work he's done. Zero respect. I mean, he does Gremlins. I don't know if he did Gremlins 2, but I know he did Gremlins.
Yeah, he did Gremlins 2.
But he gets no respect from anybody. You never read, oh, great director, Joe Dante. I mean, Harold Ramis gets respect, and I even argue Joe Dante should be on that level.
Absolutely. I love Piranha. Piranha's one of my
I've seen Piranha 2, 1. Maybe I've seen 1 or 2. I can't remember which one I've seen. Maybe I've seen both.
Okay, yeah. Piranha, my favorite Jaws ripoff is Piranha. So.
Oh, it's Piranha 1 I have seen. That's when they're in the boat at the beginning, the two guys talking. I think that's Piranha. Then I have seen Piranha. I've never seen Piranha 2 because that's Cameron's first work.
Yes.
But, okay, I'm watching I am hardcore into this movie. For the first 45, 50 minutes, I am in. Where they're flying around, they're figuring everything out. I love River Phoenix, and I love, oh my God, Ethan Hawke's amazing. I don't remember Ethan Hawke being young.
No, and I was taken by how much he looks like his daughter Maya Hawke in this movie.
Yes.
because we've been watching Stranger Things, my family, and watching her in that and him in this, I'm like, I see the family resemblance. They look so much alike.
So we get there, and they finally figure out what's going on, and then they go to that different world.
This movie just swings wildly in tone.
What the hell happened? I was on board, like, loving it. And then I'm like, what?
And then it becomes like a Looney Tunes cartoon.
That's it. And I'm like, I'm done. I don't want to watch this anymore. And it was like 35 minutes of this crap. I'm going, what are you guys doing? Who wrote this? This is not where we should have gone.
Yeah, I loved the stuff like where they're figuring out the sphere and how to make the sphere bigger to fit their capsule inside. I love that stuff. I love the sphere like bursting through the bookshelf and all the books have the circle in it, the circular holes. But then it's a Looney Tunes cartoon with these crazy aliens just making weird noises. And it felt very tonally different from the rest of the movie.
Exactly. And it falls apart. I really think they should have brought in the girl character who I love from Can't Buy Me Love, who died really young. And I've seen almost all her movies now. I didn't realize how much times I've seen her. And I'm like, why didn't we spend more time on that? Or taking these kids to China or Russia or the moon? Or something, or like some dimension that we don't know, and they have to solve a problem. And some guys doesn't want them to solve the problem because he wants to take it over. Like even something like that would have worked. But no, we find out the aliens, sorry, I'm ruining this for you guys, are kids, and they brought them there, and the dad gets mad at them, so they have to leave. I'm like, oh my God.
I think we were just praising Joe Dante. I think that is a Joe Dante thing. I think Dante does like to go throw those curveballs in. I mean, Gremlins 2, it's pretty much a Charlie Chaplin comedy, but with sound. So I think that's kind of Dante's what he does. He likes cartoons. He likes that kind of wacky sense of humor, and I don't think it fit with the rest of the movie in this case.
Oh, I agree. It just sort of drops the ball. And then they come back to our world, and it kind of picks it up again. Exactly the part where they left, where I liked, we get a little bit more of that. And I'm like, is this like, again, I have such a problem with that last third of the movie. It makes no sense to me at all.
Yeah, I 100% agree. I wish it was more... I don't want to say grounded because I do love them flying and I love all of that.
Grounded is the perfect word. Because they add this chunk of a different world that's not needed or doesn't make sense.
Yeah, okay. But
if they ground and kept this movie on Earth, or maybe it's an underground world below or like a different dimension in Earth, like a parallel Earth would have worked for me.
Yeah, I could see that. But yeah, and I think the film relies heavily on the charisma and star power of the young actors in this. And Dante happened to get River Phoenix. He happened to get Ethan Hawke, who would go on to have these amazing careers, River Phoenix.
And he got the chick for Can't Buy Me Love, who does a billion films.
Yes. So he did cast this movie phenomenally.
I do have to say, why wasn't the bully situation ever dealt with? They go to school, and that never comes back up.
I don't know. That is a good point.
Because I thought eventually they were going to do something to those kids. And they just never go back to school.
I also kind of thought that they would...
Oh, I lie. They do go back to school, but they're in class discussing some weird science crap.
Yeah, I also kind of thought that maybe they would do, like, something about River Phoenix's family, like the father being abusive. I thought maybe they were hinting at that at some point, but No, that never, nothing ever came of that or anything like that. I guess maybe they didn't want to go that dark.
And I was also thinking, when we were kids, every 80s movie had kids in it. Mm-hmm. Like, it was just times. I'm thinking E.T., this, Mac and Me. Every film as a kid, when I was a kid in the 80s, had kids in it. I never thought of it until recently at my age. Looking back at the 80s, I'm like, oh my God, I never realized 80s were the kid movie series.
Yeah.
Hulk and Dagger, it was just kids, and everything. No wonder our parents didn't want to take us to the movies.
I also get this movie and Space Camp mixed up in my head.
It's same. I've seen Space. Actually, quick story, side story about Space Camp. I've only seen Space Camp because my wife's favorite movie. When
really?
She was a kid, she loved Space Camp, and I'd never seen it. She goes, you've never seen Space Camp? So years ago, I had to watch Space Camp.
Nice.
And since my wife doesn't listen to the show, I could say I've never seen her favorite movie of all times.
Oh, really? Which is?
Beaches.
Okay, I haven't seen Beaches either.
She says, you're just going to get depressed and not like it. Don't watch it. I'm like, okay, I won't, but I've never seen Beaches. So
that's there okay. I go. Haven't seen one of my wife's all-time favorites. So.
What?
Gone with the Wind.
I've seen Gone with the Wind. And the first 2 hours suck.
I don't know if I can sit through like 4 hours of
First 2 hours are kind of dull. The second 2 hours are much better.
Okay.
So, Doug, before we let you go, did you buy anything this week?
I did. I actually have a few things here. Not the massive pile I'm sure you have, but I got, let's see, something I never heard of, but The Return of Captain Invincible. It's a 70s superhero film starring Alan Arkin and Christopher Lee.
Oh, you just said Alan Arkin? I'm in.
Yes.
Not alone. I'm in.
The Souvenir, parts 1 and 2. This is the movie with Tilda Swinton and her daughter playing mother and daughter.
Wonderful things about those movies. Wonderful. And I like 2 just came out this year, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. I haven't seen either, but I've heard they're amazing.
So upcoming list, South Doug's going to make me watch Captain Invincible and Souvenir.
Let's see. I got
It's upside down. Vampire Kiss.
Yes, Vampire's
which
Kiss.
Which I don't think I've ever seen, but if I have, I don't remember. It could be just one of those I have no recollection of watching.
This is the 50th anniversary of John Waters' Pink Flamingos.
Oh, my God. You're killing me tonight. Another movie that's been on my list for 20 years I've never watched.
Oh, my God. I haven't watched it since high school, and it scarred me, but I think I'm ready to watch it again. Two more.
Oh, no problem.
Let's see. The Worst Person in the World just came out on
which I've been meaning to watch. I'm sure I'll get to it one day. If some jackass puts it on a list, I guess I'll have to watch it.
Finally. Well, I guess I'll have to put it on my list then.
I know you're going to, so I'm not too worried.
And then finally, a 4K version of Shaft from
which is
the
a
Criterion
wonderful
collection.
Movie. Just a great movie. Have you seen all 3 of them?
I've only seen the first one.
I've seen them all.
One of the extras in here is Shaft's big score. So the sequel is one of the extras on the discs. So.
I've seen Shaft Goes to Africa. I've seen them all.
Okay. I've seen the newer ones. I've seen the Sam Jackson ones. And I've seen the first Richard Roundtree, which is just amazing. I love it.
You can see why Shaft was such a phenomenon.
I love Private Eye films. And I love 70s New York. So it's right up my alley.
How much of my pile should I do? You want 5, 10?
Go half. Half it. Go 10. Uh-oh, you're frozen.
I love Ellen Barkin and Dennis Quaid. Oh, sorry.
Oh, okay.
Perfect Sense with Ewan McGregor and Eva Green, which I've never seen.
Never heard of that.
Neither have I. Big Easy, because I mean Dennis Quaid, okay. Who I love, and Ellen Barkin's just gorgeous.
I saw
and
that
something
years
that we're
and
never going
to
do on the show, Shark's Revenge. I cannot pass up. These are from a Dollar Video. And I don't think I've ever seen The Vanishing with Kiefer Sutherland.
Oh, God. That's actually a really good movie. It's a remake
And it's got Nancy Travis, so I'm in. I have a Nancy Travis fetish for years. And this movie called Opening Night. I don't know how I miss this. Topher Grace, Anne Hedge, Tay Diggs, Rob Riggle, Paul Scheer. This must have gone direct to video.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
I don't know. I found. Do you want me to keep going? There's more. Can I work around? Okay.
It.
I'll finish this. I'll try to finish this pile. The next show, I have another pile.
Okay.
So I have Survival Island because I love Billy Zane. And somebody named Kelly Brook, I have no idea, but Billy Zane's in it. So how bad could it be? He's somewhat.
It could be something. Bad.
Something called Reverb, which I'm sure is a big pile of crap, but I have to watch it. Now, this I've never seen. The Complete Vampire Collection, The Kindred, The Embrace.
I've heard of those movies. I think I might have seen the first one.
There's three of them in here. I don't know. We'll get to it. Melissa George, who I love in The Betrayed.
Okay.
And I don't know how I ever missed Kill Me Three Times with Simon Pegg.
Oh, that's one I haven't seen it, but
I have no idea where to find it. I've never heard of this. I'm like, how did I miss this? I've seen every, and my last one is something S&M Man. I have no idea who's even in it. I'll check briefly. There is nobody in this film, but you know me, I'll watch anything. So, Doug, since it's just me and you and we had too much fun, I don't think we're inviting them back for the next one. But sounds maybe good. We'll let them in if I'm nice. So if they make it,
we'll watch it and put it in Simon's pile.
Very true. Night all.